Now, not everything about being cool is bad or fraught with social implications. Sometimes being cool is fun. It is for Stacy Peralta. He's one of the founders of modern skateboarding. He's also the director of the documentary film Dogtown and Z-Boys. Peralta took Steve Paulson back to his childhood in the early 1970s in the slums of West L.A. Back not to skateboarding, but to where it all began, surfing.
Well, surfing's the most fun thing you can do in the world. I mean, without a doubt, you ask any surfer who's ever surfed and they will tell you that it is better than anything. And when I say the word anything, I really mean it. I mean, it's the most, it's true. A good day of surfing rivals, there's nothing to rival it. Absolutely nothing, except maybe, you know, heaven, perhaps. So we all wanted to be professional surfers, but, you know, the likelihood of that was slim. But we were good enough to be at least recognized as good surfers.
If surfing was the most wonderful thing in the world, why didn't you just spend all your time surfing? Why skateboard at all?
Because, see, surfing depends on many factors. Like, it's a very complex activity. For instance, like, if you play baseball, the only thing that's probably going to stop you from playing baseball outside is rain. You know, but otherwise you can play in the wind, you can play, you know, when it's hot, you can play when it's cold. Surfing, there are many conditions that have to be correct. The tide has to be right, the swell has to be right, and most importantly, the wind direction has to be right. And in Los Angeles, pretty much in all of California, the wind for surfing is correct for the first 3-4 hours in the morning, from sun up to about 10 o'clock. And then after that, the wind turns what's called onshore, and it blows the surf out. So you really can't surf it very well. And so you have the rest of the day to do something. So that's why we rode skateboards, because we didn't have anything else to do.
You have some great old footage of when you were surfing. And this was not exactly Waikiki Beach here. I mean, you were surfing kind of in, amongst these broken down buildings through these pilings of a pier. I mean, it looked just perilous.
Well, you know, as you know, there was a pier called Pacific Ocean Park Pier that had its heyday kind of in the 40s and 50s. And by the time the late 60s happened, the pier went out of business, and neither Santa Monica nor Venice had the money to get rid of the pier. So it sat in that state, in a dilapidated, decaying, decomposing state for about 8 years. And it just so happened that right at the side of this pier, in this kind of like horseshoe bay of piers, was a remarkable wave. But in order to get the best part of that wave, you had to take off very deep. And what I mean by deep is you had to go pretty much inside the pilings and ride through pilings to get this wave. And it was very, very dangerous.
So how did you translate that kind of surfing aesthetic into skateboarding?
Well, the thing is, we had something in Los Angeles that was unlike anywhere else in the world. And Los Angeles is built in a very hilly, kind of foothill, mountainous area. There were many school playgrounds that were built in the Los Angeles area and up in the hills that had these uneven playgrounds. And so what the architects designed was, in order to flatten out the playgrounds, they had to bank walls on the sides of the playground to even everything out. And so many of these schools, which were about 7 of them in the Los Angeles area, had these beautifully tapered banked walls of asphalt. And riding on a skateboard on these banked walls was so similar to surfing that we could literally emulate the surfing maneuvers that we were doing in the water onto the asphalt.
And basically what you were doing is you were going out and finding large patches of concrete, and hopefully there was some elevation change there so you could do some of your tricks.
Right. But the biggest, the most profound place to skate was as a result of a drought that hit Los Angeles in the mid-70s, in around 74, 75. And California, especially the Los Angeles area, is pretty much the swimming pool capital of the world, especially the kind of pools that movie stars are famous for, the big, you know, voluptuous bowls. And so the city government prohibited people from filling up their pools. You couldn't even water your lawn without getting a ticket by cops. And so as a result of these pools emptying up, we had a new style of terrain to skateboard on. And as a result, we ended up inventing modern vertical skateboarding and the whole vertical sports kind of phenomenon.
Of course, you had a slight problem. These these pools were actually owned by people, so you had to sneak in
yes.
to use them.
Yes, but you know, you can't underestimate the ingenuity of kids. They're very, very smart and very resourceful when they want something. And we figured out a way how to sneak into people's backyards when they weren't home and ride their pools, and we figured out sometimes when they got home. And we'd drive 50 miles just to skate in a pool in the middle of the desert. I mean, wherever we could find a pool, we were there to ride it. it just became a situation of casing out the block, casing out who owned the house, who were the next door neighbors, and who was going to give you trouble, you know, were the dogs going to bark. You know, we chased this thing, you know, like it was our lifeblood. I mean, it was so much fun, you know, to go in and ride someone's pool and also to defy gravity.
And what you did is you invented a new aesthetic. I mean, we're talking about a bunch of teenagers from Los Angeles who totally changed the sport of skateboarding. I mean, this had been a flat sport, you know, on a flat concrete surface, and you made it vertical.
Yeah, what's interesting is when you look at, like, ESPN2 today and you see Tony Hawk and all of these, you know, professional skateboarders today going up and down these ramps and, you know, doing 540s in the air and spinning flips 8 feet out off these ramps, that had the humble origins in the beginning with us sneaking into these backyards. And we were able to ride these vertical walls for the first time because we had the urethane wheels. Kids weren't able to do this back in the 60s, although it had been attempted. It wasn't possible because the clay wheels were like riding on rocks or like pieces of ice. So you couldn't get up on the side of a pool wall without sliding down. You know, the urethane wheels gave us the ability to grip the sides of the wall. So we were carving and kick turning in deep swimming pools and defying gravity in a way that had never been done before. And when we were doing this, we had no idea what was possible. And kind of every day, something was being developed. And the cool thing about it, there were no corporations involved with us or anything. This was a kid thing being done in a very clandestine manner.
Now, during this time, skateboarding nationally made a comeback. I mean, it had disappeared for years. And then there was a national tournament at Del Mar in 1975, and your Zephyr team showed up there.
The Del Mar contest was the first major skateboarding contest since 1965, and we, the Zephyr boys from Dogtown, went down there to compete in this, not having any idea if there was anybody else in the world skateboarding. We got there, and there was 600 or 700 kids, you know, in this contest, and it was a complete shock for us.
But you were the punks. I mean, everyone else was kind of copying the moves from the old 60s, you know, handstands, wheelies, that kind of thing. But you had this totally new style.
Yeah, we came in with a different style. The skaters were doing handstands and L-sits and nose wheelies and all the tricks that were made popular in the 60s. And we came in with this approach that was based on the banked walls that we had been riding in the pools. And so our style was very low to the ground and, you know, sliding the wheels out and doing like a crouch 360s and all these like surfing cutback maneuvers and pumping our board. And the people officiating the contest didn't take well to us. They didn't like what we were doing. They didn't think it was skateboarding. They thought it was something else. But the kids and the younger skaters in the audience completely dug what we were doing. And it was the kickoff point for modern organized skateboarding. After that day, after that weekend, skateboarding literally rebounded. And from that point forward, there were contests every weekend all over the state and then eventually all over the country and then manufacturers and then skateboard magazines. And then suddenly we were getting offered to be paid as professional skateboarders, you know, to make a lot of money riding skateboards, something that we were always told, you know, was a trivial waste of time.
Now, what you're talking about is kind of a remarkable cultural phenomenon. I mean, you have these kids, these teenagers from L.A. who didn't have much money, suddenly you become stars. And, I mean, part of the reason why people gravitated to you was you were cool. You know, you were kind of putting up your finger at the authorities and you were doing your own thing. And then suddenly you're being courted by big corporations. And, you know, there's the question, are you going to sell out? Did you sell out?
I don't think so. You know, selling out is when you divorce yourself from the activity that made you who you are and when you lose touch with the activity that made you who you are. And I don't think any of us really lost that. I think we always tried to represent skateboarding in the way we thought it was, which was that this is a fun activity and it's going to be subversive. No matter how many corporations get involved in this, it's going to be a subversive thing because it's something that kids can do anywhere. There's concrete. And by that, they're going to do it in places they're not supposed to do it at, and that's just simply part of skateboarding. You know, they're going to skate in people's backyards. They're going to skate on staircases in front of buildings and on hand railings and stuff, you know, in front of supermarkets because that's just what's fun.
You're kind of saying that if skateboarding gets sanctioned too much or if there are a bunch of skating parks out there where it's all legit, it loses some of its appeal. In some ways, it's not cool anymore.
Well, it becomes controlled like Little League. It's all of a sudden a controlled, you know, deal. And, you know, the thing is there's two sides to skateboarding, you know, just like anything. We live in a capitalist society and there's a certain benefit to that and there's a certain loss of innocence to that. The benefit is that you get access to things in a capitalistic society. The detriment is that things become controlled and rigid. And you just got to walk that fine line. The beauty of skateboarding is that no matter how many parks they make, if a kid is skateboarding in a park that's controlled with rules and regulations, and another kid comes into the park and says, hey, there's a pool that just emptied out a couple of blocks away in a backyard, the fact of the matter, the kids are going to go ride that pool because they want to taste the adventure of doing something in a place they're not supposed to be.
How do you think skateboarding has managed to hang on to its appeal as this kind of outsider sport after all of these years? And it's been courted by a lot of money, a lot of big corporations, and yet it still has this aura that, you know, this is where the cool kids go.
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you a perfect example. Snowboarding is 20 years younger than skateboarding, okay? Snowboarding made it into the Olympics. And I think snowboarding made it into the Olympics because the Olympic Committee can put their hands around it. It's a clean sport. It's done on a clean white mountain. The kids are dressed fairly nice. It's something that they can understand. I think they look at skateboard and they go, you know what? This is too dirty. It's too urban. It's too loud. It's too unsanctioned. And I think in a sense that says that skateboarding is cool, you know, because the Olympic Committee doesn't like it.
How nostalgic are you for the old days of Dogtown back in the mid-70s?
You know, I'm not someone that, you know, lives in the past. I pretty much look forward all the time. But I will say that in making this film, it was nice to have that nostalgic ride to see how scruffy we looked back then. You know, we were wearing these little worn Vans tennis shoes, you know, Levi's with the back pockets ripped off our pants. We had long blonde hair, and it was like, it was very simple. Things were very, very simple back then. And it was kind of like in the age of, you know, the pre-MTV age, when every commercial on TV wasn't, you know, hit with rock and roll music and fast cutting. It was like, there was a certain dopiness to growing up back then that was kind of nice, you know. And now we live in the age of extreme cool where, you know, everybody has to conform to a certain cool. And as a result, nothing's cool. It puts so much pressure on everything. And the other thing is, the second something becomes cool in our culture, the big corporations are flying up in the sky like hawks, and they dive down on that thing to, you know, to acquire it and put it in their next TV commercial and you know, to be associated with it, to show that they're cool. It's kind of like destroying everything that could be cool.
Stacy Peralta is the director of the documentary film Dogtown and Z-Boys. He spoke with Steve Paulson.